Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Alex Ross, and he'll be answering your questions on nymphing strategies for the Trinity River steelhead. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Alex a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use the hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it right now while you're watching the show. We'd sure appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Alex Ross about nymphing strategies for Trinity River steelhead. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Alex, I'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under tonight's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a book, courtesy of Stackpole Books. And here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question I ask at the end of the show. And the question will be about something that we talk about during the show. And you must submit your answer along with your name and location using that text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills. Take notes and type fast when the time comes, and you might be proud of a brand new book from Stackpole. Tonight, our guest is Alex Ross. Alex is the founder and head guide of Trinity Guide Company and a highly respected fishing professional with more than 20 years of experience guiding and deckhanding along the entire California coast. His deep understanding of Northern California waters comes from a lifetime on the water, ranging from commercial salmon and tuna trolling offshore to fly fishing the Trinity River, Lower Sacramento River, and surrounding fisheries. A 100-ton master captain and licensed California guide, Alex brings an exceptional level of professionalism and versatility to every trip, whether rowing his 18-by-60 Willie drift boat or running his 26-foot Willie Nemesis. He has the experience, skill, and judgment to safely and effectively guide anglers targeting a wide variety of species and fishing styles. He's known for his strong work ethic and client-first mindset. Alex is committed to delivering high-quality fishing experiences in all conditions. He takes pride in going that extra mile to ensure each day on the water is productive, educational, and enjoyable. With a warm, welcoming approach, Alex works comfortably with anglers of all skill levels, from seasoned veterans to beginners and casual enthusiasts. His vision for a Trinity Guide Company is simple: create fun, memorable fishing adventures tailored to each guest. A day on the water with Alex is more than just a guided trip. It's an experience built on knowledge, professionalism, and genuine passion for fishing. Alex, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, well, good. Happy to have you. And yeah, it's going to be fun talking about steelhead fishing. One of the easiest fish in the world to catch, as I understand, right?
Yeah, I don't even know why it's a job.
Yeah, one of those lifetime pursuits for some people, like permit, right? But I hear you make it a little bit easier than normal. So yeah, let's dig into that. We got lots of good questions tonight, and let's talk about, we're going to be talking about the Trinity River in California specifically, and the techniques that you use on that river, which may not be common in other places, but they work for you after all your research and many years of experience on the river there. So that's what we're going to be focusing on here. So for anglers who haven't fished it, how would you describe the Trinity River compared to, say, other West Coast steelhead rivers?
Well, what sets the Trinity apart for nymphing and fly fishing specifically is that it's a smaller river. It has low clear conditions and it's flow control. Not only is it flow control, but we have a hatchery at the top of the river. And because we have two native tribes that live along the lower part of the river, we have a consistent amount of water and fish all the time. So lucky us, we have a great fly fishing fishery for that reason. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that because it's low and clear and consistent, and when I say consistent, the rocky bottoms make for a river that clears fast. So when we have rain and everywhere else is blown out, we can still fish. When, populations of fish are fluctuating because of natural disasters or regular environmental problems, we have a hatchery that's producing fish, as well as because of the natives that we are, guaranteed a certain amount of fish to come out of that hatchery. So how it compares to other West Coast steelhead rivers is it's better suited for nymphing. It's really consistent because of its rocky bottom, which also makes it really tricky, gin clear conditions. And that's why I would say the overwhelming strategy is nymphing, because we can fish the river and not beat it up. Like by nymphing, we're fishing a real soft presentation that doesn't cause a lot of just disturbance in the water. And I think that that's really important to cue in on why it's such a great river to fish. And what I call it boot camp for steelhead fishing with a fly rod is because, as we're going to learn tonight, the tactics for steelhead are all going to apply everywhere you go. Just because I'm fishing a different spot of the river here, I'm going to be searching for the same conditions wherever I go. So how it compares is it's more consistent, it's sustainable, it's accountable. The fish can be a little bit smaller, and we are 140 miles from the coast, so you get a darker fish typically, or when we get chrome fish, it's for a shorter period of time. The downside to that is they're not as robust. They could not fight as hard as one fresh out of the ocean, but the upside to that is they're abundant, they're available, but they can be a lot harder to get to bite. And that's why, small presentation, nymphing and fly fishing is king on the Upper Trinity. Not all the time. Sometimes conditions apply and conventional fishing has its place as well. But, that's really how it compares is your consistency, your rocky bottom, and the way that we can fish the river. It's
Right.
access. We're able to access it almost all the time. And we have fish coming in and out of this river almost year-round.
Now, the hatchery upstream is a hatchery for steelhead
Yep,
specifically.
it's a hatchery
Okay.
for steelhead specifically. Yeah, we have salmon and steelhead, and that hatchery is actually, I think, been approved for a revamp. And that's really great, because if you follow fisheries, we're losing a lot of hatcheries due to lawsuits and non-native species acts and lots of stuff, but not this one. This one, we're getting a new hatchery. And that's widely due to the fact that we have these tribes on the river and we are obligated to produce a certain amount of fish. And the glorious thing about producing a certain amount of fish is we need to sustain a certain flow. We need to sustain a certain amount of water. So when we have a population of fish, that population is going to require a certain amount of water. And we can look at a trend of rivers that we take a lot of water from, and as we take a lot of water, we notice that we're producing less fish, because fish are going to ultimately determine how much water we can take from a fishery or from a waterway, and how much we need to give it. So for these things, for these reasons that we're talking about, it's a pretty special place to guide. It's a pretty special place to fish. And it's one of those places that you could put on your travel list and almost guarantee that you're going to be able to make that trip. And that's probably the biggest determination as to why it's such a standout. And it happens to be the best West Coast steelhead fishery by numbers.
Now, you're talking about the positive aspects of the hatchery, the Native Americans that live there, that the government is basically required to give them a certain amount of fish. But, and I see all those factors working together, the flow, the hatchery, the Native Americans, the fishing guides like you trying to preserve the fishery. But I've been on other rivers where it hasn't been that way, where, you know, the it seems like the fish are the last thing that they're thinking about when they're talking about flows. You know what I mean? It's like, which ditch is it going to go in? And not so much concern about the fish that occupy the river. So I'm just kind of just thinking how pleasant that must be for you guys to kind of have everything working in your favor there. Yeah.
Well, the way I say it is smooth and pleasant, but the reality is we still have a large contradiction between Native Americans, river restoration, Bureau of Reclamation, water flows, and the people. I don't see it as a problem. I see it as a beautiful symbiotic relationship, and it's really worked in my favor and a lot of the guides' favor. Not everybody feels that way, but when you back up and you look at the whole picture, the reason that we're talking about water and fish is because of the tribe, we have to have a certain amount of fish. Because we have to have a certain amount of fish, we are able to access a certain amount of water. And regardless of how that plays out politically in the community or how people feel about it, the end result is going to be the same. And that's going to be more water means more fish, means more fishing days for guides like me, and more opportunities to catch fish for all the people who come to visit this beautiful area. And that's the beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah. The dam releases. So is it generally then a consistent flow that you have, or do you find it, I mean, you know, go down the White River in Arkansas, you know, and it can change by 2 or 3 feet.
Okay.
Do they maintain a constant flow that you can count on then?
Okay, so this is a huge point of debate. For a long time, we maintained a consistent summer flow, which was 450 CFS, and a winter flow, which is about 280 to 300 CFS, and it's been consistent. With the new ideology of biologists, we have a new flow program which emulates more of a natural flow, which would say, hey, for some of the time of the winter, we're going to have a high flow, and then we're going to back it off, and we're going to have a low flow, and it causes a fluctuation. And what I've seen in the short term that they've been doing it is I've been able to fish on almost all of the days, and the fishing has been fantastic. The controversy here is, when a group of guides get used to fishing a certain steady flow and that flow changes, the way that we fish, the way that we read water, and the way that we present this to our clients change. And so it's been met with opposition, which I totally understand. But in the bigger picture, I believe that having a fluctuation of flows more regular to what a natural river would be like has been a huge benefit. And I've learned to fish this river at 280 CFS. And the next week, I've fished this river at 3,600 CFS. And I believe that when we're done with this podcast, I'm going to share the tools with you guys that I use to read this water. And I don't think it's a big deal. I think that we're going to be queuing in on the same stuff. We're going to be finding fish in all levels. And I think it's been really helpful. But the problem here is if you run a swing company, right, it takes a lot of days off your calendar. If you are regiment dry fly fishermen, there's very few times of the year and places that you can fish with tries, and it takes some of those days away. So for me, it's really important to be versatile. I don't consider myself a purist at all. I'm here to catch fish, and if I need to change my tactics tomorrow, I'm equipped to do so, and I try to be like water. I try to fill the container effortlessly. So that means if we're fishing dry droppers next week, great. If 2 days later we're nymphing, awesome. It just doesn't matter to me, and being flexible has actually been the blessing to my business here and has opened my eyes to the beauty of this fluctuation, and we've had some fantastic fishing because of it.
What makes the Trinity particularly suited to deep nymphing for steelhead?
Okay, yeah. So I think the question really is, what makes steelhead suited? Because we're going to use these same techniques on every river that I'm fishing. And what makes the steelhead specifically suited for deep water nymphing is we got to remember that a steelhead is an ocean fish. So it's feeding in the ocean. So it's aggressive and it's looking up and it's not usually surface feeding. So the deep water nymphing and the style of nymphing that we're going to discuss tonight holds the bugs in that strike zone effortlessly. And it stays consistent throughout the river. You're able to keep your indicator and your bugs floating from a boat without having to recast a lot. And that's really why steelhead and deep water nymphing are like a good relationship. And the Trinity specific, it's such a clear, shallow, rocky river that nymphing has become king, but really it's fly fishing has become king. And there's lots of guys that come here to swing and it's not as productive, but they catch plenty of fish and there's times and places to dry fly fish. And that is also because largely we have a steady flow. And so these fish are used to seeing bugs on the surface, even though that's not their natural way typically, but it can be successful here. So I don't think so much as is the river specific for nymphing. Nymphing is just a really, really effective way to stay in the strike zone for steelhead and to keep your gear wet. And that's something that I'm looking for on a daily basis with clients is, how can I keep the indicators in the water? How can I use the boat to keep the indicators in the water? And I don't want to be casting. I want to be in the water. And that's why the technique and the fish work well together.
Do the fish position differently in low flows versus high flows? And what is the water depth at low flows and then high flows?
So that's a really great question, and it's a big question. So how do fish position differently in low flows versus high flows? Part of that answer is they don't position differently. The other part of that answer is I like to say that steelhead are lazy, even though they're not lazy, right? They're swimming to the, I think some of our fish have gone to the Bering Sea and back, right, when we tag them. So they're not lazy, but a steelhead is going to want to hang out in water where they can effortlessly push water through their gills, where food is going to effortlessly go by their face, and they don't have to expend much energy to eat or to get oxygen from the water. So they're going to generally be in walking speed water. So when the flows are high, you'll notice, where do you see that pillowy, soft, walking speed water? You see that on the bank. And that's indicative to coastal fishing, where you have these big, heavy, wide rivers with soft bottoms, and you'll see guys casting along the bank. If you're in Alaska steelhead fishing, you'll see guys casting along the bank, because that's where that pillowy, soft, walking speed water is. And this is going to be a reoccurring theme tonight, is we're looking for that kind of water. So as the flows drop, you're going to find that water more in the middle of the river, because the structure of the river is going to create those conditions. We have rocky lanes and deep ledges, which are going to cause a variety of different speed of water. But as the flow comes up, the fish are going to be pushed to the bank, and it's only because that water that we're looking for is going to be now on the sides of the river. As the majority of the river is rushing, I'm queuing in on the edges where it's slow. So to answer the question, the conditions are going to be the same that they're in, the position is now going to be different. And this is a huge part of looking for steelhead in every river, because in every river, they're going to want to behave the same way. They've come a long way, and they don't want to waste too much energy when it comes to hanging out or eating.
Okay. And what, just to get an idea, what is the depth of the water in those, you know, hold, where they're holding? Because we're talking, we kind of talked about this is deep water nymphing. What is deep water?
Okay, so when we say deep water nymphing, what we're really pertaining to is a long leader with weight. Now, where the depth is going to be determined is the conditions that we have at the time. There's going to be several different conditions that are going to tell you how deep the fish are in. Let's say it's been unseasonally warm. Like this year has been very warm, and I have been catching fish in what I would call like transition water. And that's not a technical term. That's what I call transition water, is water that I would say is walking speed or conveyor belt speed water. That's anywhere from 1 to 6 feet deep. That's moving. And that's where I've been catching my fish lately. So there's a couple different factors. Temperature seems to have a lot to do with it. When it's really cold, I'm catching fish in what I call holding water more often, which can be big, still, deep pools. And when I say still, I mean like a pond. Still, deep pools, or pools that have some undercurrent or big, deep holes. When I notice that the temperature is warmer, I'm catching fish in the shallower runs that I'm talking about now, or when we have the presence of salmon. So when we have early season steelhead, summer run steelhead, and some fall run steelhead, and the salmon are in these big holes, they're actually pretty aggressive and they're pushing the steelhead out, or the steelhead will be hanging out in tailouts waiting for eggs to come down. So we've got a few different factors that are going to determine our depth. Really got to pay attention to where we've been catching fish or where people are saying they've been catching fish to determine the depth. As of right now, I'm catching fish in 1 to 6 feet of water, and I'm looking for that conveyor belt speed water.
Good tips. What are the seasons for steelhead in the Trinity?
You have two basic seasons, which is your fall season and your winter season. Seems like a majority of our fish come in the fall, and especially our hatchery run, because our hatchery fish are going to be clipped and people are looking to catch a hatchery fish and take a fish home, and we support that because we have a hatchery, so those fish are, you know, people are welcome to take fish home if they want to, and if not, we just let them go, and it makes my day a little bit easier. But we're looking for fall fish, and we're looking for winter fish. And winter fish are going to come, I would say, December, January, February, March. And fall fish, I will start catching, you know, October, September, October, November. And then sometimes there's some fish that filter in early. But you can really time the first run of fish with the first big push of salmon. And that's what's determining our seasons for steelhead. It's pretty common to say that you can catch a steelhead in this river at any time. So there's always going to be one around, but that's really our main runs, is our fall and our winter runs. And that's where we get a majority of our fish.
Okay. All right. Good. Let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll start talking about rigging and how it's actually done. So hang tight, everybody. We'll be back here in just a few seconds. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com, or you can call them at 866-845-9284. Again, it's the uglybugflyshop.com, or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Alex Ross about nymphing strategies for Trinity River steelhead. If you'd like to ask Alex a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. So, Alex, I always ask my guests, what's going on in your fly fishing world? Tell us about, your business and maybe any other things you have related to fly fishing out there. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, right now I'm pretty heavily into our winter steelhead season, and it's been a fantastic season. You can follow up on my day-to-day routine and what I'm doing on my Instagram at the Trinity Guide on Instagram. You can see me at LinkedIn at the Trinity Guide or Alex Ross. I have daily updates, or you can always visit my website at www.thetrinityguide.com. And right now, my gear is worn, my boat's beat up, my clothes are tattered, and I'm just in it. And I'll be in this season, so to speak, till probably the end of March or maybe a little bit later, as long as we're catching fish. I don't get much of a break. We'll be transitioning to our lake season shortly after, and I've already started getting ready for that. And on my few days off, I'm working on boats and equipment and servicing vehicles. And, I don't think the guide life is very glamorous. I think that I meet a lot of people that fantasize about of the guide life, but it is quite a commitment that started many, many years ago. And I feel like I'm just patching it together on a daily basis, but I'm looking forward to springtime. I'm looking forward to fishing on the Sacramento River, and that's my next fly fishing adventure. Will be lower stack rainbows, and it's a completely different thing. We're in the sunshine and we're in town. We're fishing downtown Redding on the lower Sacramento River, and the fishing it's just completely different. It's got an urban vibe, and Trinity fishing is spectacular. It's beautiful, but I'm freezing. I'm battling snow and icy conditions. And like I said, if you saw me, you'd think that I was a homeless man out there, but I got duct tape on my jacket and my waders are patched up, but we're just in it to win it at this point.
Well, it could be worse, Alex. You could be crabbing in the North Bering Sea or something, right?
I couldn't be. I'm not going to do that. It wouldn't be me. I've got a lot of guide friends that have left to crab, and it's safe to say that I think that I work with some of the best freshwater guides in the world. And very fortunate to do that, but because of that, the bar is very high and people aren't easily impressed. I've got guides that I work with that are coming and going to Alaska or South America and Central America, and everybody's meeting here at this time to do this winter steelhead fishery because it's so consistent and the bar is high. And the fishermen are amazing and the boat work is amazing, and this is one of the most technical fisheries that I've ever experienced in my life. And I started in the 90s, and I'm humbled on a daily basis, and I get to work with all these amazing guides, and maybe everybody doesn't get along, but because everybody is so good, the cream rises to the top and it pushes everybody in the industry to do a little bit better. And that's just where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great. Well, let's talk about rigging. And you kind of answered this question already, but Jason Stacy did ask it about whether these techniques we're talking about tonight are river specific or do they work in other places. And I think you've already said we can take this elsewhere and apply these techniques and, given the situations, be successful. So do I have that correct? Do you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, so the only thing that's going to change is rod size, tippet size, in the actual size of your indicator, and maybe the size of your weight. When I'm closer to the coast, I'm going to be fishing an 8 weight or a 9 weight. And here I like a 7 weight or a 6 weight, depending on the rod, the conditions, or the client. Here it's really common for me to be fishing 3X and 2X for tippet. I would say that on the coast I'm fishing 2X and 1X. But the basic setup is going to be the same. And this setup that I'm going to talk about here and that I use, you can use anywhere. I've fished everywhere for steelhead, but I'm sure that this will work. And as we kind of get into that, you're going to notice that a lot of the questions I've already answered, and we're going to talk about that, because man, this group of people who wrote in these questions, like Jason and some of these guys here, very smart questions, and I can tell because they're very poignant and they're the right questions to be asking. So if it sounds redundant, if it's the same answer over and over, I do apologize, but I will explain. But no, I believe that after tonight, you'll be able to take this anywhere. And of course, with some little nuances. And one thing I always tell people is be nosy and play dumb. And that's what I do. You know, if I go somewhere new, I ask a million questions and I just shut my mouth. Oh, what color? Oh, how do you guys do it? You know, and I always learn something new, but you're going to hold these secrets to your hat here. And we're going to give you guys a really good idea of how to set up for steelhead nymphing.
So what is your, are you using floating lines always? What's the length of your leader? What's the length of your tippet? You know, what's your total rig look like?
Okay, so this is going to be complicated, and I'm pretty specific. I'm a one-trick pony here. So if I have some terminology wrong or it doesn't make sense, I'll explain. This is really my bread and butter. This is what I do. I don't have a vast experience of fly fishing outside of this. So if my terminology is off, or I use the wrong word for something, I do apologize, but we'll get it straightened out. So first, I think it's important that we talk about the reel. I fish for Galvin. I love Galvin reels. It doesn't matter what reel specifically, but you want a sealed reel. And you want it sealed because things are going to get wet and things are going to get icy. And once your reel gets icy and your drag starts getting icy, it doesn't flow correctly. So it can be choppy and that can lose a lot of fish. Let's talk about the rod. I fish 9-foot rods. I fish for Douglas fly fishing. They don't make a 9.6, and I actually prefer a 9-foot rod on my boat because of convenience. But I would say a majority of the guys out here are fishing 9'6" 7-weights. I have 9'6" 6-weights, and I have 9'7" weights. We want a rod that casts really well, but we want a rod specifically that mends really well. So when we're talking about line, it's floating line, weight forward, and the line is really important. And I'm going to recommend Scientific Angler, a Nadro, and I like the textured line, and that's because we're doing a lot of mending, and mending is very important in this game. The better you can mend, the longer your drifts will be, the less you need to manipulate your indicator, the less you need to cast, and the more bites you're going to get, and ultimately the more fish you're going to put in the net. So now that we've talked about the reel, the line, and the rod, let's get down to how I actually set this thing up. So I'm going to go from my line to about a 5-foot section of amnesia. Now, I know a lot of people probably don't use amnesia. It's pretty old school. There's a couple reasons I'm going to use amnesia. Amnesia has no memory, and it's high visibility. And it's strong. So I'm going to take this 6-foot section of amnesia and I'm going to tie it to my floating line. Now this is also going to be unconventional, but I prefer a clinch knot to my floating line, not a perfection loop. There's two reasons why. One is clients have a tendency to wind that in too far into their rod, which limits their ability to cast when it's loop to loop. It's always getting caught. And the other one is I'm taking this rig off and tying it onto client rods all the time. So you're going to notice if you come to the Trinity, a lot of the guides are going to have a clinch knot from that, what I call the butt section, to the floating line. It's something that we all do, and it is pretty specific to this area. It just makes our job a lot easier. So that's why I clinch knot it there. So that piece of amnesia, that's where my indicator is going to go, and I'm going to use a very specific indicator called a J-Decator. And the J-Decator that I use is a balsa wood indicator, and it's a through indicator, so the line goes right through it, and I stake it with a toothpick. I have struggled with bobber stops too long. I just use a toothpick. It's very important that I'm able to slide that indicator up and down and change the depth for different conditions, which we'll talk about. I see there's some questions about that, so we'll get into that later. From that piece of amnesia, I'm going to tie that amnesia directly to a micro swivel. Not everybody does that. Some people do a perfection loop and tie a clinch knot to it on the bottom, but I'm going to tie that micro swivel at the bottom of that butt section. Above that micro swivel is going to be my indicator, which slides up and down. Now, I'm going to take a 3-foot section of 1X or 12-pound fluorocarbon, depending on who you're talking to, and I'm going to tie another micro swivel to the bottom of that. So now I've got 2 micro swivels with a 3-foot section of 1X fluorocarbon, and that is connected to a 5-foot section of amnesia. I like green, but you can use whatever color you want. And on that section of fluorocarbon, that's where my weight's going to go, okay? Now, what's important about the weight, and there's questions about weight here, so I'll get into that soon, is that I want to be able to slide that weight up and down that section. A split shot is fine, or you can use a bullet style weight, or you can use any kind of weight that you want. And I'll typically, if I'm not using a split shot style weight, I'll put a bobber stop on, then my weight, and a bobber stop below my weight, so I can slide that weight up and down that 3-foot section of fluorocarbon. Sometimes I want less weight, and I'll slide it up to give the bugs more of a dead drift. Sometimes there's more current at depth, and I need to slide that weight all the way down. I see questions about weight, so we'll get into weight soon. From there is going to go my tippet. Now, I'm going to fish 2 bugs or 3 bugs, depending on 2 things. River conditions. If the water's high, I'm going to fish 3 bugs. And clientability. The more bugs I can put in the water, the better. I want more intel and I want more stuff in there. But if it's too much for the client to fish, I'm not going to do it. If the water's too low and we're snagged, I'm not going to do it. So it's safe to say that from that bottom micro swivel, I'm going to have about a 3.5-foot section of tippet, and I'm going to use 2X to my first bug, and that's going to be my biggest bug, whatever bug that is. I'm going to tie right to that eyelet with a clinch knot. Then I'm going to take my second section of tippet, which is going to be 8-pound or 3X, and I'm going to tie that to the eyelet as well. So I'm eyelet to eyelet. I'm not tying on the shank. I like eyelet to eyelet. And my smallest bug is going to be on the bottom of that. So all in all, my tippet may be 6 feet long. I like long breaks between my bugs because what's going to happen is ultimately that weight is going to come down close to the bottom. And those bugs in the current are going to drift up. And as they drift up, I'm going to cover different sections of depth for those fish to cue in on. Now, I hope that wasn't too complicated. It's a lot. One other thing that I do that may be specific to my boat is I always tie a loop knot on my bottom bug, and I feel as though I get more bites with a loop knot. It's able to float and drift a little bit more natural, I think.
No, I think you very clear, very clear. I can see all of that in my mind's eye and how you've done it all. And, yeah, a lot to learn from that, and like we were talking about, in other water too, or just for, you know, other trout fishing and so forth. The rig sounds really efficient. So you had said you were going to talk about the weight. So, yeah, what's, you know, you had mentioned different kinds of weights, and you haven't talked about any weighted flies either. Can you kind of dive in? Well, I'll tell you what, I need to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to have you dive into that. All right. And we'll continue from there, Alex. Sound good?
Good. I'm happy to continue after the break. No problem.
Okay, thanks. Discover the power of Pierce Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting experience, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead trout or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's and innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit PureSkagit.com. Again, that's PureSkagit.com, or you can call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Alex Ross about nymphing strategies for Trinity River steelhead. If you'd like to ask Alex a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box to send in your question. Okay, so back to weights here, Alex. You had briefly mentioned how you use them. Can you go into more detail on that and also, whether you use weighted flies or not?
Sure. Weights are a huge question, and it's a constant question between guys. How much weight are you using? What kind of weight are you using? It's constant. So I'm going to tell you what I do, and then I'll talk about the other options that other guys do that are also successful. So I use a AAA or an SSG tungsten split shot style weight. And the reason I do that is so I can change weight or move weight up and down the section of line that I have my weight on pretty effortlessly. And I don't know if it's any better than any other kind. It's just what's successful for me, so that's what I do. I typically want to err on the side of as little weight as possible. So anytime you're steelhead fishing, if you're finding that you're constantly needing more weight, you need to put the brakes on and look at the water. Because there is a certain point where you're fishing the wrong water. So I know if I have a single AAA tungsten bead on, I know that I'm fishing the same water that I'm looking for, regardless of the flow. And this changes when I'm entering a piece of water that I'm very familiar with, and I know that there's a deep ledge or a structure that I'm trying to access. At that point, I will add weight to sink my bugs down to a certain depth. Now, weighted bugs. Yes, I use weighted nymphs almost all the time. Sometimes I use more weight or less weight depending on the conditions, but just remember, if you're always trying to fish as light as possible, that is the name of the game. So there's not a standard. It's what works for you. How often are you getting snagged? Are you floating through the things effortlessly? And are you able to stay in that walking speed water and fish effectively? I don't want my indicator tapping the bottom. I don't want my indicator leaning one way or the other. I want it straight up and down. So other style weights are used. I know guys that are very successful that use like bullet style weights with a bobber stop above it and a bobber stop below it, so they can slide that weight up and down depending on the run. Because every run or every hole that we may be in may fish a little differently than the one before it. And this is where hiring a guide or fishing with somebody who knows the river is very helpful. Because it takes so long to learn each section, I know already when I'm coming around this corner or when I hit this bridge that I'm already switching my weight. I'm already moving it to a different location because I've got a rock or a ledge in mind that I want to fish. So I can't say that there is a generalization or a standard for any place. But if you remember, we're trying to fish as light as possible. And if you find yourself overweighting, constantly adding weight, we need to reassess the water that we're fishing. There are certain conditions, certain rivers, and certain times that require more weight than others. When I'm trying to figure out if it's me, if I'm cueing it on the wrong water, or maybe everyone else is doing it, I like to say, I ask, and I have no shame. I will ask some of the other guys. I will ask some of the locals if I'm going somewhere new, if I'm fishing some water that's unfamiliar. How much weight are you guys typically fishing? Now, if everybody that's good is saying, hey, we're heavy here, okay, then, oh, for where I fish, for my styles of fishing and where I've found success, I'm always erring on the side of how light can I fish? How shallow can I fish? I don't want to fish really deep. I don't want a bunch of weight. I want to stay in that walking speed water. And having intimate knowledge of the river is going to help you to determine how one hole you may need more weight or more depth, and this other section you want to be really light and shallow. And I know that's a lot, but I hope that helps.
So, a couple of questions. You said you use weighted flies at different weights. How do you identify those or organize those in your boxes?
That's a good question. I have, a lot of standard bugs that I use. And if The section of river that I'm fishing is low on current. And that's really the determining factor, is not depth, but very little current. That's when I'm going to go almost no weight or no weight at all. If the section I'm river has that I'm fishing has a lot of current, that's when I'm going to start pulling out weighted bugs. And I'm not talking about like Euro nymphing weighted bugs, but you know, we're fishing 16s, 20s, 18s, not really big bugs, and so they're not weighted a lot, but that's what's really going to determine the weight that I'm using on the bug, is how that thing is gliding through that run and how much current there is. If I'm fishing something that has almost no current at all, I'm going to yank the weight and I'm going to fish a bug with no weight. A standard bug here is like a Pat's rubber legs. We have them with tungsten bead head. So when I need to get down to a deep reef or a fishing that holding water, when the fish are really in big, deep pools and holding water, it's time to pull out those tungsten bead head rubber legs, like a size 4 or a size 6, and really sink it down there. Or we're fishing walking speed water in shallow runs, and now I'm going to have no weighted flies.
Okay. You had said something about you want that weight. I think you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you said you want that weight directly below your indicator and not going either way, either upstream or downstream or bouncing on the bottom. Did I have that correct? And if so, how do you know that you've got it weighted properly to do that?
Yeah, that's easy to tell. So if I have a client who's familiar with fishing, who can mend well and set that indicator in a dead drift, the best way to tell if your weight adjustment is correct and if it's fishing properly is you can see that amnesia or that monofilament line coming out of the tip top of that indicator and folding up river. If that indicator is sitting straight up and down, and that little piece of line is coming out of it and making a curve towards your fishing rod, we're good. As soon as I'm hitting the bottom, now I'm going to lean one way, or if I'm mended in the wrong direction and I've got too much line out on the surface of the water, I'm going to notice that I have a lot of surface tension and that line's going to be dragging that indicator one way. And the indicator is not only going to indicate a strike, indicators are going to tell me if I'm fishing the right depth of water, if my client is mending correctly, and if I'm hitting the bottom too much. And I don't want to tap the bottom at all. I really want it just to hover. I want it to be seamless through there. And that's going to also save the most amount of bugs. Because at the end of the day, if I lose, you know, $270 worth of bugs, it's a big hit.
Yeah. The and you mentioned you're changing up your weight because you know the river so well. What about those of us that don't know a river, or it's a new river for us and we're trying to sort that out? Or even, let's say we're wade fishing, not fishing from a boat. Where do you start with that,
Okay,
with your weight?
so I have a general weight that I start with on this river and a general depth. So when we talk about depth, we're going to talk about our indicator to our weight. This is not including tippet length. I want to
Okay.
be 5 feet from my indicator to my weight. This is how I start my day. I'm going to adjust those indicators 5 feet to my weight, and I'm going to fish one single tungsten AAA. And that's how I start my day. And I could probably fish almost every day and almost every condition that way. There are some holes that I will not be able to effectively fish because I know that it's not going deep enough and that I may need to slide that indicator up or add more weight. But as a general rule, 5 feet from my indicator to my weight and one single AAA, and I will be effectively fishing this river most of the time.
Okay. And you talked about, yeah, fishing your adjustable indicators. And can you describe the type of indicator you use again, just so I really have a
Yes,
clear
no
picture?
problem. The kind of indicator that we use specifically here is called a J-Decatur. And you can buy that J-Decatur, I think, oh, somebody bought the business, but you could just Google J-Decatur, but all it is a balsa wood indicator with a hole in the center of it, and your line goes through that center, and you stake it with either a couple of bobber stops above it and a couple of bobber stops below it. That never seems to work out for me. So I just use a toothpick, and I'll stick that toothpick in the indicator at my desired depth, and I'll clip the bottom of the toothpick, and when I want to move it, I'll pull that toothpick out and slide it up, or I'll slide it down. The reason I use Amnesia is because it doesn't kink. It doesn't have any memory. So I can move my indicator up and down a piece of Amnesia, and it's not going to come out twisted or tweaked, and I get a lot of life out of it.
Now, the toothpick, do you shove it in there and break it off, or
I clip
like
it.
That one?
I just shove it in there and clip it clean, and I just make sure to have a little stack of toothpicks, and that's been the best way for me. I do see people using bobber stops. It's just that these indicators sometimes require three or four bobber stops above and three or four bobber stops below, and it's just a lot on the line. And as we start fishing more turbulent water when we move to the coast, I use a coastal jadicator, which is a much larger balsa wood indicator, and it's going to require five or six bobber stops, and it's just too much. So I just use a toothpick, and it's never done me wrong.
And why not something like the indicators with the, you know, the little screw tops on the top that you can loosen and move up and down? Is there a reason you don't?
Yeah, I can tell you why I don't fish those. The reason I don't fish those, and some guys do, is because if you notice, that will kink your line as you screw it in and screw it out. It has an indentation on your line, which weakens your that section of line. The other reason is, if you notice as you cast, as you retrieve it, or as you send it out, mostly on the retrieve, it has a tendency to do a 360. So over time, casting all day, I'm finding that it's causing more problems because of that action. Some people really like those, and I'm not saying that they're not good. I'm saying that I have not liked them as much as the Jadicator. But they are very sensitive, and they do work well. But because of the kinking of the line, by the way that it screws in, and the 360 action that you get on the retrieve, I steer away from them.
So that 360 action is twisting your line up. So,
it is. It is. Yeah. And it's causing more problems as they lift the line out of the water and it wants to return itself. It seems to cause problems. And I'm trying to limit the problem.
Of course. Yeah. Great. Thanks for sharing that. I hadn't heard that before. So, that's good information.
So the Jadicator, I think Solitude bought the Jadicator patent. So you can get a Solitude one, and they're going to come. There's several different styles of Jadicator now. The Solitude one, they have like a 3D printed one. They have a hard plastic one. And I'm going to tell you guys out there, if you can get your hands on a balsa wood Jadicator, and you can still find them online, and he still makes them, they're hand turned. It's a game changer. I mean, it's really a fantastic product, and it's a standard here. And I think that you guys will like them. And they come in all different sizes. When I'm fishing trout, I use them. When I'm fishing on the coast, I use them. I really like that product.
Yeah, and just in case people are looking for the spelling, it's Jaydacators. Yeah, I'm seeing all kinds of them out here on the internet right now. Yeah, foam as well. The balsa and so forth. Yeah, cool. Listen, we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about flies and then about, you know, the drift boat itself and how you position your boat to do this kind of nymphing. So hang tight, everybody, and we'll be right back. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with the restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats like the Peacock Bass Study in Miami, Florida. FFI serves as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish to preserve and promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. Again, that's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Alex Ross about nymphing strategies for Trinity River steelhead. If you'd like to ask Alex a question, just go to our homepage, fill out that form, and send your question in. All right, Alex. So, yeah, Mike from Ontario, Canada asks, do you use egg patterns on your steelhead or simply stone flies and caddis patterns? And what are your go-to patterns for Trinity River steelhead?
No problem, Mike. That's a great question. So we have there's some standard bugs here that if you have, you're always going to be okay. So a Pat's rubber leg, size 4, size 6, size 2, the hairs here is always going to be a go-to. A pheasant tail, splashback pheasant tail, they're always going to be great bugs. And then we have red copper john in green, in red, and in blue. They're industry standards here. And then every guide is going to have a variety of different bugs that they're going to hold tight. There's one bug we have here called a Duracell. There's some other bugs that I use that are pretty specific to the trout fishery. One is called a sweet pea, a lot of caddis patterns. What's important is you get these bugs in front of the steelhead. So one of my mentors told me this. It's like rolling an apple in front of a pig. They are programmed to eat. If you get your bug in front of their face, they're most likely going to bite it. So that being said, there are patterns, there are bugs, and there are days where these fish are going to be more aggressive to bite something. But if you have these standard bugs and you present them properly, you're going to be successful, and I can guarantee it. So let's talk about egg patterns. I'm not a traditionalist. We do a lot of bead fishing here. And, the bead fishing primarily came from Alaska, I believe, and I like to think that we have perfected it. A lot of these guides that come here come from Alaska and go back and forth. So we fish a lot of beads, and we could probably have a whole show on bead fishing strategy. But small beads work really well here. Soft beads work really well here. Eights, tens, and 12s, they're fantastic, especially when the salmon are in. If you have a stonefly, a rubber leg, and a bead on, I think the terminology here is eggs and legs. Those are standard coastal steelhead fishing patterns, and they work tremendously well. Some people are like, hey, fish or to them.
Alex, we lost you there for a second. Can you back up a sentence or so?
Yeah, no problem. I was saying that a bead and a rubber leg here are your number one go-to pattern. And the nickname for it here is eggs and legs. Large variety of different beads, large variety of different ways to fish beads. We could do a whole show on bead fishing exclusively, I'm sure. And I was saying that, some people traditionally don't want to fish a bead, and that's okay. But if you get comfortable with fishing beads and you're a steelhead fisherman, you're going to be successful. And that's the bottom line. So any of the bugs I'd mentioned, plus a large variety of beads, whether they're hard beads or soft beads, and I can guarantee success.
How do you rig up your beads? Or you said you could do a whole show on that, but is there a particular way you do it, or you changed?
We could go on and on and on about beads. So I'm going to steer away from the soft bead rigging because that's going to get rather complicated. And I'm going to give you guys a solid way to rig a hard bead. And I fish a lot of hard beads. I fish hard beads on a regular basis. They're fantastic. So I'm going to fish my bead typically, if it's a small bead, about 3 inches above the hook. Okay. And I'm going to usually tie the hook on first. Then I'm going to slide that bead down. I'm going to loop that line through the bead 3 times, and I'm going to tie it on and fish. And if you loop that bead 3 times with your line, you won't need a bead stop. and that lead will not budge, and you can fish that thing all day.
Yeah, and there's something about that kind of rigging too, of how the better hooks the fish, right? I mean, being a little bit higher up above the hook.
Yeah, so that technique came from fisheries where we're catching the same fish over and over, and fish were getting damaged, right? So the traditional way of hooking a fish, you're hooking it from the inside of the mouth, and bead fishing presents an opportunity to hook the fish on the outside of the mouth, protecting the fish a little bit more and giving it an easier release. So some people don't like the idea of having that hook too far away from the bead because it's almost like you're lining a fish. So I say 3 inches from the bead, you're going to get a solid hook set. You're not going to upset anybody, and it's going to be healthy for the fish. You're going to get a nice hook set on the outside of the mouth, and that hook fish is going to get an easy release. I like a thin wire style hook. I believe Gamagatsu makes a really good egg hook. It's called a nano, which I use, but a thin wire hook, and you should be good to go. If you wrap that bead 3 times, 3 inches above the hook, I guarantee success. And you can buy beads really cheap and have a variety of different colors as the egg starts to change color. So when fish are spawning, eggs are going to change color over time. The next day it's going to be a little bit different. The next day it's going to be a little bit different. You're going to be able to match the hatch, so to speak, with your egg. And sometimes they're queuing into the bugs, and I always have a bug above it. And it's one of those patterns that if you're traveling to go steelhead fish anywhere in the world, that you're going to be successful. And usually the locals will say, hey, we're getting them on this color bead. I know I fish a Peachy Keen a lot from the Hard Bead Company or from B&R Soft Beads, and I think it's troutbeads.com. And that Peachy Keen from troutbeads.com is a go-to on my boat.
Okay. Let's talk about drift boat positioning and presentation. There are some specific questions from Steve Schramm in California. I guess it sounds like he's fished the Trinity often. But in general, I'm going to just let you roll with this because we are running short on time here. So can you tell, just kind of go over the important things about managing a drift boat? Of course, when you have a guide, that's their job, but for those of us that do like to row our own boats, what tips can you give us?
Yeah, drift boat management is very, very crucial for steelhead fishing, especially in small, tight water. You can really ruin a day by hitting rocks and not operating your boat correctly. Most fisheries, boat operation is not that crucial. Steelhead fishing, it is very, very important that you don't get your boat too close. So techniques that we use here that aren't used other places are often called sculling, where I'm able to move the boat in and out with my wrist on one side and my wrist on the other side. It's different than crabbing. Crabbing will not do all the time because when you're crabbing, you're moving the boat one direction and the other, and it's causing our clients to have to recast a lot and recast a lot. So boat technique, boat placement, and keeping your boat off the water you're fishing is extremely important. And remember, a drift boat and a raft are completely different tools. A raft is fishable for indicator and side drifting, but rafts are primarily for shuttling. And when you see somebody fishing in a drift boat who's not a good boat operator, they see the water differently. And what they do typically is shuttle or have a tendency to want to get out of the boat and fish the seam. I cannot guide people like that. I have to be able to operate my boat in a way that keeps my clients in the boat and keeps their indicators in the seam. Once you become a solid operator, you will also see the river differently. And we won't be thinking in terms of, oh, I would really like to get out of the boat and go fish that section. We now see that as, I want to stay in the boat. I want to keep my indicators in the water. I want to keep my boat right off that section, and I know exactly where to put it. Because now when I can scull and operate a drift boat, I can manipulate my client's cast. So if he's not very technical, if he can't cast very well, by him adding line or taking line away, I can now move the indicator into the seam effortlessly with my boat. and be successful.
Steve Schramm asks, how do you deal with heavy boat traffic in the Junction Meadows area of the Trinity?
Okay, so I'm not sure what he means by Junction Meadows, but what I think he's referring to is Junction City. I'm sorry, Steve, if I got this wrong, but I think I got it right. So, okay, this is a tough question. As a professional, I understand who I can fish behind and who I want to fish in front of. So it's a constant battle of who am I fishing around, who's in front of me, who do I have a good rapport with, and who do I want to stay away from? I deal with this by being very good. And in the grand scheme of things, I would say that I'm okay. I'm pretty good. I know who's excellent, and I know how they fish, and I know who I don't have to worry about. So I really have to know who I'm fishing around and how they fish to put myself at ease. Most days, I don't have anything to worry about. And when I see someone, I know exactly what they're going to do. I know exactly where they're going to go, what their style is, and I know how to seamlessly move in and out of the river and not have a bad day. The Trinity River specifically is a heavily guided piece of water, and it can be very intimidating as a sport fisherman to come in when you don't know everybody's style, you don't know how the river flows, and it can be very difficult. The best thing that I can say to someone who's trying to enter into this is to hold back and watch. Watch how people fish different things. Watch how people approach different things. And be cautious about where you place your boat. And there is no easy way to meld into this culture of drift boat operating with these high-level rowers without really paying attention to how people operate and finding your spot. And it's not easy to do, and it's a great question.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, that if the river is crowded, that it really would be good to know if, who you're following. You know, if somebody's banging their boat down the river and hitting every rock, you surely don't want to be behind somebody like that. And I'm sure there's a mix of pros and then not so pro people on the river as well, right?
Yeah, and I can usually tell, I mean, I can tell by the way somebody dips their oar in the water what their level is. And it's not so much that I'm worried about the novice banging on rocks, because when I see that, I know exactly what to do. I can hang back. I know exactly where they're going to push fish. I'm going to take my time, and I'm going to let them push fish right to me. They're not going to catch any, and we're going to get a few, and it's going to be okay. It's the guys that are very, very good. And when I, like just the other day at work, I got to work, I saw a guy that I was like, oh, man, we don't want to be fishing behind him all day. So I changed plans immediately. I went to the next put in above him, and I stayed in front of him. We had a fantastic day. And in my head, I knew if I got behind that boat, we were going to be struggling, you know, because we try not to leave too many fish behind. It's really important to know who you're fishing around, and you're able to read one's ability. So even if they're great fishermen, if they're not great oarsmen, I know what they're going to do. They're going to do the same thing that everybody does that doesn't row a boat. They're going to pull over. They're going to drop the anchor, they're going to get out, and they're going to go fishing. And I'm like, sweet, I'm going to pass them effortlessly and leave them in the dust. You know, so you really have to be able to read the boat and read the operator to develop a strategy to be successful. And I would say that boat operation takes 10 years of steady practice to be good. You know, so don't be hard on yourself, and be patient and pay attention and ask questions. Most people, if you ask, are really willing to help.
Yeah, yeah. The other question, one of the other questions Steve had was, what is the etiquette on back rowing and redrifting a run? How much time and space should a downriver boat be allowed before passing them when there are several boats on the section? And I don't know if you do that, but yeah.
Yeah, this is a huge question, Steve. I understand this question 100% because this causes a lot of problems on the river. So the Trinity River is specific to other rivers because the Trinity River is not such a river where we can share a piece of water. So on a large coastal river, I can fish a section. I will pull out of the section. I will back row on the shoulder, and another boat will come down and fish it, and we will work a hole together. That is not how we do it on the Trinity. So if I'm a guide and I'm fishing a spot and you see me fishing that spot and you come in and I'm back rowing that spot and fishing it, The etiquette for you is to pass on the inside of me. So if I'm fishing the seam on the left, you would pass on the right side of my boat and you would move on. I'm allowed to back row that seam as long as I want. And if you want to wait, you can pull anchor. You can drop your anchor and get out and sit and have lunch, but you can't pressure the guy. Once I'm in the hole on the Trinity, that's my hole. If you want to move through that river without any problems, the best thing to do is to row to the person fishing it, drop anchor, look at him and say, hey, I'm kind of new. How should I proceed? What do you want to do here? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And the person will instantly change their attitude and say, oh, okay, hey, I'm fishing this, but you go ahead. Or, hey, I'm going to take off. You can fish it, because typically the person in front is going to have the first right of refusal. So if you just row around somebody and not acknowledge them, that they may find that to be rude. Or if you start fishing that same section that they're fishing, that's going to be considered rude. So that was a really good question.
Yeah, yeah. And specific to the Trinity. Yeah. Because
I would say to tight water. Tight water.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, right. I mean, on bigger rivers, sometimes it's not an issue at all, right? I mean, it's
exactly
easy to pass and so forth. Yeah, yeah. Okay. We've got reading water and strike detection and hook sets to cover. So we're getting short on time here. I'm going to let you go and talk about both of those things without reading the questions. And just give us your wisdom on the clues, which run will hold steelhead and which won't, and what are you looking for in the way of strike detection and hookups?
Sure, no problem. I can really summarize this. So based on what we've talked about today, what we're looking for is walking speed water. I'm looking for pillowy, soft, walking speed water, and because the Trinity is clear, I can see the bottom of the river. So because I can see the bottom of the river, there's a point where down on the edge of the bottom.
Hold on. Alex, you broke up again. You were saying when you could see the bottom of the river, I think. Pick up there.
Yeah, where you can see the bottom of the river and it starts to get deeper, right? It starts to get into that darker color. I want to stay right on that edge, and I want that to be walking speed water, not too fast, not too slow. And that's what I'm looking for in every river steelhead fishing. It doesn't matter where. I'm looking. Those are the conditions that I'm looking for, and that's going to always produce fish for me. Of course, other conditions are going to apply. Sometimes we're not catching fish in that kind of water, and I notice that they're in holding water and they're in big pools, and then I'm looking for big pools, and I already know where they are. And sometimes they're in tailout specifically, as the end of the riffle starts to turn to the white water. But I'm going to know that because if I'm fishing that walking speed water and keeping my indicators in as long as I can, I will just pay attention to the fact that I'm getting bit at the end of the run, and that will let me know, hey, they're sitting in tail up. I'm catching them at the end of the run. And that's how I determine where they're sitting.
Okay. And then what are you looking for in the way of, you know, are you – as far as strike detection?
So any time that indicator goes underwater, any shift of that indicator, and I have a saying that I call the steel taco, and it's really simple. Have you ever taken a bite of something that you thought was food and it wasn't? We all have. What do? We spit it out immediately. So that bug is like a steel taco. They think it's this nice, tender, juicy morsel, but it's actually a hard piece of steel with wire wrapped around it. So you have from the time that your indicator goes underwater to set the hook. If it goes underwater and comes back up, it is too late. They have spit it out. So every twitch of that indicator, you want to set the hook on. Every twitch.
Good.
Sometimes it'll set the hook itself, and that thing will just go swimming away, and you got it. And other times, it's the slightest twitch. And I want to set the hook on that. And that will bring us to, you know, hook sets. So on my boat, I want that arm straight above your head. I don't want you to pull. I don't want you to pull across your body as if you were on a creek. I want that line pinched in your finger and that arm straight in the air immediately. And what that's going to do is that's going to get tight to your indicator. That's going to let you know you have a fish. All you need to do at that point is strip line out and get tight to the fish. If you set too much, if you pull back, what happens is your indicator and your tippet and your weight come flying out of the water and hit a tree behind you. All I want to do is put that hand straight in the air. If it's a fish, I pull one strip of line out. If it's not a fish, I can go ahead and just recast it in the seam effortlessly with one hand and be right back to fishing. If not, if we overhook set, A, we're going to lose fish. B, if it's not a fish, we're going to be tying new bugs because they're going to be in a tree. And I hope that that is helpful because try to teach that all day.
Very good tips. And, very good tips. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And I call that Statue of Liberty. I just want to look like the Statue of Liberty. If I feel it's a fish, strip down, pull on it a little bit more. We don't need much of a hook set. Sometimes we've got a size 22 sweet pea on there with, you know, 3X on a 12-pound fish. So we've got to take it easy. And I want to make sure that I set hook on everything. You know, I want to make sure that I set hook on everything. And probably one of the biggest mistakes that I see people do is they don't have that line pinched in their hand. And there's one thing that's going to determine that. And it's the moment your client starts to try to put the line in their mouth. In that moment, we have a problem. Okay, so that means that they didn't have the line pinched in their hand holding the rod. They had their line in the other hand. And as they set hook, there was a big bit of belly in their line. And now their left hand is straightened out across their body. Their right hand is in the air. And they've got their mouth wide open trying to grip their line in it. That's what we want to avoid. Don't mistake that for a good move. Don't ever mistake it, you know. I hear people, oh, my uncle, he's so good, he puts the line in his mouth. And I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, geez. Yeah, yeah.
We don't want
that. No, but that, yeah, when you just stop and think about that, you missed the hookup because of all that slack and delay, whereas the way that you've described it, you're tight to it right away. I mean, yeah, so, yeah, it makes perfect sense, perfect sense. Well, with that wonderful, incredible tip on how to and how not to do it, we're going to have to wrap things up here, Alex. And we're out of time, but stick with me for a few more minutes while we do a few giveaways, and then we'll call it a night. So hang tight, and we'll be right back and do our giveaways. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what do you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show because you don't want to miss out on a great chance at the great prizes we have to offer. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show to collect your information so that we can deliver your prize to you. So first, we'll give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about Fly Fishers International, go to flyfishersinternational.org. And a wonderful organization to support. So our winner for that tonight is Jason Stacy in Kentucky. Jason Stacy. So congrats, Jason. I know you've asked a lot of questions on the show, so I'm sure you'll enjoy that membership. And now we'll give away a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited, and another great organization to support. Check them out at tu.org, tu.org. And our winner for that is Mike Sousa in New Hampshire. So congratulations, Mike. And now we'll give away a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. And what I do, I have a list of books I have here to give away. And the first person to answer the question in that text box on our homepage, put in there your name, your location, and your answer. And the first person to do that will win a book from Stackpole Books. So the question, I mean, it's going to make this real easy tonight. Name three flies that Alex recommended for steelhead fishing on the Trinity River. Three flies. Just give me those three names and we'll get you a book from Stackpole Books. Sometimes it takes a minute here, Alex, to get these answers in. There's a slight delay for them to even hear the question. So we'll just keep refreshing here and hope we get somebody that was paying attention here. So still checking and let's see here. Okay, I've got, and I guess this is, okay, looks like Sweet Pea Nymph, Hare's Ear, and Duracell. Are those three that you mentioned?
Absolutely. Those are great, Bud.
Okay, so our first one in is our winner. And looks like Stephen Sykes in Silver Springs, Maryland. So, Stephen, I've got your, let's see. I've got your email address. I will send you an email with a list of books, and then you can pick one. And at that time, select one, send me your address, and we'll get that shipped out to you. So congratulations, and thanks for paying attention. It's funny, you know, Alex, how Hare's Ear and Pheasant Tail Nymphs just won't go away, will they? I mean, they've been around.
No.
I first casted a fly with my fly rod in junior high school, and they're still here, you know. So what works, works, right?
Don't change it.
Don't change it. Alex, hey, thank you so much for being on the show tonight with me and sharing your knowledge. And I know we barely tapped into everything you know about fishing, but thanks for being with us tonight. Really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us.
No problem. It was my pleasure. If anybody has any more questions that I didn't get to, feel free to email me at my website at thetrinityguide.com or reach out to me on social media at The Trinity Guide on Facebook or on Instagram, or you can always find me at LinkedIn at The Trinity Guide, Alex Ross, and thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks for sharing and continuing to share, and I'm sure there'll be some people take you up on that. Well, hopefully all of you have found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line menu in the archive. You'll see, you know, all of our past shows, over 430 shows, I think, now, which you can search by keyword or keyword phrase. So check it out. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at what you find out there. Our next broadcast will be on March 25th, 7 p.m., 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'm going to interview Matt Sapinski. And our show will be A Fishable Feast, Fly Fishing and Eating Your Way Around the World. What happens when world-class fishing meets unforgettable cuisine? Well, listen in while globe-trotting fly fishing guide and chef Matthew Sapinski explores the intersection of rivers, culture, and the table. We'll journey from legendary trout streams and coastal waters around the globe and discover how food, place, and angling traditions intertwine. If you've ever dreamed of chasing fish by day and savoring local flavors by night, this conversation will awaken the appetite for your adventure. Be sure to add this upcoming show to your calendar. Just click on Add to Calendar right below Matt's photo on our homepage and put it on your calendar and you'll be all set to go. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, and the Ugly Bug Fly Shop, as well as Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future live broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing. Welcome.